I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Seth Williams announced earlier this year that he was not seeking re-election for Philadelphia District Attorney. He's been charged with more than 20 counts of public corruption, lost his law license, but says he will finish out his term this year. Well, that has opened the door to seven Democrats and one Republican vying for the job and for votes on the May 16th primary. The candidates have had several debates, including one last week at WHYY, co-sponsored by WURD and the NAACP. While most of the candidates have progressive stances on the issues, whether it's the death penalty, incarceration, civil forfeiture, stop and frisk, police misconduct, crime, and violence, they would each bring different experiences and perspectives to the job. And here to give us some background on the race of the candidates are Dave Davies and Holly Otterbein. Holly, senior writer at Philadelphia Magazine, and nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
It's a pleasure.
Also with us, Dave Davies, senior reporter at WHYY. He writes the Off Mic blog. And Dave, always a pleasure. Nice to have you back with us as well.
Yeah, came all the way down the hall.
Yes, we did, just panting and sweating there. Let me just make sure our listeners can connect with us. There are a bunch of ways to do it. You can text or call our comment line, 267-405-2006. We want to know what candidates or what candidate has caught your eye and why. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Dave, why does this race matter?
It's a really good question. You know, it happens in years in which voters generally aren't paying a lot of attention. Turnout is extraordinarily low. But if you think about it, I mean, the county prosecutor is really important. You know, communities need to be protected from crimes serious and less serious. And enforcement needs to be fair. I mean, you know, a misguided investigation can ruin somebody's life. So you want somebody in the DA's office who is serious, who has great integrity, and is a good manager. And the other thing to remember is that once we elect a DA, he or she can pretty much be there as long as they want. Prosecutors are popular. They tend to be reelected unless they move on to higher office or screw up, as the current DA did. So it really matters. And I think I would really encourage folks to listen to this, but also check the websites. There's plenty of material. Holly's written some great stuff about all these candidates. We've written stuff. It's a vote to be taken seriously.
And I should add, TV 12 will be showing the debate that was last week on May 7th at 3:30 in the afternoon. This Sunday, so people can watch that debate. Holly, anything you want to add to what Dave said about just – it's so curious and, I have to say, frustrating to me to think that we have to – just encourage people to go and vote, especially for this particular job.
We do. I mean, the last district attorney's race that was competitive, I believe, drew out about 100,000 people in the primary out of 1.5 million people in the city. Obviously, not all of them are voting eligible, but still. I would just add to Dave's points, which were great, that district attorneys often actually weigh in on laws that are being considered. So all of the mandatory minimums that are now being reconsidered across the country were very supported by district attorneys across the nation. And I'm sure that that will continue to be the case in the future. So it's just a really, really important race. You know, this is somebody who's going to have an impact on crime. This is someone who's going to have an impact on how justice is meted out. You know, everything from, as you mentioned, civil forfeiture to just how we deal with guns to everything. I mean, it's a really, really important race.
And just to add to another little perhaps wrinkle to the conversation, Dave, is we are talking about a Trump administration. We're talking about Attorney General Jeff Sessions, and who knows how the next district attorney is going to deal with both of those entities, but we're in a slightly new world, I would say.
Sure. I mean, everybody is a bit on edge in local government, and there are threats to withdraw funding for the sanctuary city policies of this administration. Maybe something we'll get into, and, you know, a whole different set of priorities from Washington. So, yeah.
Holly, you had a piece about just how progressive most of these candidates are. Should we be surprised by that?
I think we should be. I mean, Philadelphia, of course, is a very Democratic city, but I've said before and I'll say it again, I don't think that it's usually a very progressive city. Lynn Abraham was a tough on crime district attorney for almost 20 years. The New York Times called her the deadliest DA in the country because of the number of times that she sought the death penalty. It was higher than any other district attorney at the time. This is unusual. everyone is trying to sell themselves as progressive in some way. Even the Republican candidate is talking about, you know, finding solutions to dealing with drug addiction and that sort of thing. You have Larry Krasner, who is a civil rights attorney who has for years fought with the police union in various different ways. He is now running for district attorney, and it's hard to conceive of him as being even a viable candidate a few years ago. I mean, he would have been probably just laughed off the block. But now he has a super PAC that's backing him. He has former city councilwoman Marianne Tasco, who's a kingmaker, a queenmaker in local politics, supporting him. He's got a lot of grassroots support. That's just something you would never expect to see in Philadelphia, I think, in past years. A lot has changed in the last decade.
Go ahead, Dave.
Part of that, I think, is that our feelings about crime and incarceration have changed. You know, back in the 90s, I was living in Germantown, and there was a feeling among a lot of people in my community that things were out of control, and we needed real law enforcement, and that was the focus. And in such an environment, you know, a lock-em-up candidate flourishes. You know, most statistics show crime has dropped quite a bit, and I think we've realized that, you know, the terrible fallout from locking too many people up and ruining lives and condemning them to circumstances of poverty forever. And so I think there's a lot of consensus that we need to rethink the way we incarcerate, the way we treat people who are in trouble.
Well, I do want to play clips from, these are tiny little clips from each of the candidates running for district attorney, not the Republican, who is not challenged, but there are seven Democrats. We mentioned Lawrence Krasner. Let me play a little clip. And all these clips go back to a business association debate that was in West Parkside, Philadelphia, Business and Technology Center in Philadelphia. We're going to begin with Larry Krasner. And I should say this is in no particular order. We just picked them as they came. And this is Larry Krasner talking a bit about progressivism.
I mean, they've all got their progressive pants on today, but some of us have holes in those pants, okay? You need an outsider, you need a change maker, and I'm that candidate.
Dave, Holly mentioned the fact that there's some money, some endorsements behind Larry Krasner, an interesting, slightly out-of-the-box candidate in that he's never been a prosecutor.
You know, it's interesting. We have two career prosecutors in this field, and then Larry, who is the career anti-prosecutor. And the way he distinguishes himself in these debates, and he did it very effectively there, is to say, these folks talk progressive. I've walked progressive for 30 years, suing the police department, representing protesters for free. And it is a compelling message. I think there's a question of whether somebody who is a strong advocate is going to be able to manage that office effectively. You know, reforming the criminal justice system isn't just a matter of what you believe. It's whether you can work with the courts and the politicians to make change. All that said, he has an enormous backing, enthusiastic backing among progressives. This national group backed by George Soros, it's actually not a super PAC here in Pennsylvania, just a regular political committee because they can spend whatever they want here. They've put in their media buys are up to almost $600,000.
Why, Dave? Why much money behind this particular candidate?
Because Soros has made a national priority of progressive reform in the justice system and decarceration, and he's put, $6 or $7 million out across the country. I mean, I will say one thing about ads. Independent expenditure ads, which were created by Citizens United and other decisions, allow people to get whatever they want and spend unlimited amounts, ignoring the city's contribution limits. But the rules the City Ethics Board has placed on them, which are tougher than federal rules, means they can't use video from the candidates. This is done in congressional races all the time, but the Ethics Board said, if you're going to be independent, that means really independent. And so what you get ads where the production values aren't as good, and if you look at the Krasner ad, there are a lot of stills rather than nice, beautifully done video. The other thing is it's more expensive to buy ads if you're an independent expenditure group. The stations have to give candidates the lowest rate. Uh-huh. They give the independent groups what's been described to me as the screw you rate, 20 to 30% higher. And so your buck doesn't go as far. That said, You know, he needed name recognition, and this helps him.
Sure, sure. Holly, you want to add to that? And he did also get an endorsement from a group that had endorsed the current mayor, Jim Kenney, when he was running for mayor of Philadelphia.
Yes. As I mentioned, City Councilwoman Marian Tasco and former City Councilwoman Marian Tasco and current City Councilwoman Sherelle Parker have endorsed Larry Krasner. Their endorsements were seen as pivotal in the mayoral race in 2015 to elect Jim Kenney. And it'll be interesting to see whether or not the independent group funded by George Soros will actually highlight those endorsements in advertisements. That was what was done in the Kenney campaign, again, also by an independent group, and it proved to be very successful, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is a city with strong patterns of racial identification in voting, and I think for Jim Kenney to have Marian Tasco and Dwight Evans and Sherelle Parker and some of these respected African-American leaders say, this is our guy, matter. We've had cases in the past where white candidates have had one endorsement, but not a whole group like this. And there is an African-American candidate in this race. We'll get to that, I'm sure. And I think it is really it's hard to underestimate, I think, the impact of those endorsements. Apart from the symbolism, Marian Tasco's ward, the 10th, and then Isabella Fitzgerald's ward, the 50th, are two of the most high-producing wards in the city. They're organized. They get people out. People listen to them. You know, the progressives are active. I'm not sure how many of them are registered Democrats.
Oh, interesting.
Many are, but some aren't. I mean, a lot of them are independents, right? I mean, or, you know, they think more about protesting rather than political involvement in voting. But these folks are veterans of low turnout elections and know how to get votes out. I think this is a huge thing for Larry Krasner.
Yeah, I mean, Marian Tasco has one of the highest turnout wards, which is just so important in a race like this, where you have seven candidates. If you have about 100,000 people turning out, as they did in past district attorney primaries, it could be determined by a few thousand votes.
We've done probably a whole hours with you, Dave, on this, but how does that work? On Election Day, Holly, how do you get out the vote? Is it knocking on people's doors? Is it providing transportation to the polling booth?
Yeah, it's all of those things. It's also sometimes the campaigns calling up people and saying, did you vote today? Are you going to vote today? Please vote today. I mean, Dave could probably talk a little bit more about this, but a lot of it comes down to just grassroots knocking on doors. As old-fashioned as that sounds, in Philadelphia, it's successful.
It works.
And there's a difference between a stranger knocking on your door and somebody you know. And this is where there is a relic of a political machine. A good committee person who's lived in a community for decades will know 20 or 30 or 40 families who they can reliably say, you know, Marge, Johnny, I need you to come out, and I want lever 57 and lever 52.
And it's that specific, that direct?
Oh, yeah. You'll have a ballot card right out there as they walk into the polling place. And if it is from somebody you know and trust who's maybe helped you get a streetlight fixed or maybe helped your kid out when he had a parking, whatever, those are the kinds of relationships that matter. And again, it is less effective when you need hundreds of thousands of votes. It is far more effective when a low turnout election. I will just note that the last time that this office was open in 2009, Seth Williams won that primary with 5% of registered Democrats in the city.
5%?
5%. Doesn't take that many in a multi-candidate low turnout election.
Well, we are talking about the May 16th primary, the vote for district attorney here in Philadelphia. It is an open race. There are seven Democrats, one Republican, vying for votes on that election day. Dave Davies, senior reporter here at WHYY. You can read his off-mic blog. That's MIC. Halia Otterbein, senior writer at Philadelphia Magazine. And we want to hear from you. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. I'm talking with Dave Davies and Holly Otterbein about the upcoming DA's race here in Philadelphia. We began things off playing just a tiny little clip from Lawrence Krasner. This was from the Business Association of West Parkside at Philadelphia Business and Technology Center in Philadelphia, the debate that they had back in March. Let me play something that Tariq al-Shabazz said at that same debate.
I can tell you about stop and frisk because I was stopped and frisked. My brother was stopped and frisked. My son was stopped and frisked. I can tell you about police getting hit me on the head with a flashlight because I got hit on the head with a flashlight. They need to sue somebody to get some money to understand that. So that's amazing.
I mean, Holly, that's a powerful message. Stop and frisk here in Philadelphia.
It is. I mean, Tariq is here to say that he has experienced a lot of the injustices of the criminal justice system and that that's why he has an incentive to fix it. A little bit more about him. He was formerly the number two to District Attorney Seth Williams for a few months before he resigned in order to run for District Attorney. Before that, he was a criminal defense attorney, and before that, he was a prosecutor in the DA's office. So he's had a lot of experience in and out of the system. He also takes a lot of the same progressive stances as many of the other candidates do, wanting to use the death penalty as little as possible, only in extreme cases, reform the civil forfeiture system. But I think one of his biggest selling points to Philadelphians is that he, again, has experienced some of the injustice that somebody like Larry Krasner has talked about and sued over.
And he's the only African-American candidate running for DA.
Yeah, it was interesting. He came into this very late when it appeared that we were going to have an all-white field, a busy, crowded all-white field, and, you know, doing racial politics as people do, among other things. It's not the only thing that governs Philadelphia elections, but they said there's an opportunity here. And Tariq stepped up and took it. Now, he does have some baggage. There are tax liens, more than one, which add up to some hundreds of thousands of dollars. He says he's paid a lot of that off now, but he hasn't exactly released the details of that. So, and he says that it really has nothing to do with his ability to run an effective DA's office. Critics would note, well, we have a DA now who came in with some skating on some tough financial issues, and you don't want somebody who needs extra cash running that office. And then there was a recent piece by Ryan Briggs of the Online City and State, which raised some questions about whether he had effectively represented a murder defendant. A federal judge found, in fact, that there had been insufficient representation. It's worth looking at the details and looking at Tariq's response, which was to call the writer a racist.
And the story fake news.
And the story fake news. It's a little too long and complicated and for us to go into here, but it's worth taking a look at. You can see Tariq's response at philadelinquency.com because they actually transcribe what he wrote on Twitter. It's a lot easier to read there.
Interesting.
But it's an interesting. He doesn't have a lot of money in this race. Had started late. Seems to be running a campaign, from what I can tell, aimed primarily at African-American voters. We actually don't hear much from their campaign. I don't know if you do.
They haven't aired any ads. It doesn't appear that they have enough money to air ads.
They have posters, I know. And you got to say, Tariq, as you heard in that clip, is a riveting speaker. That's why he's a good trial lawyer and speaks from his heart. And, you know, I interviewed all these people, as did Holly, and I got to say, he is a compelling person to have a conversation with. So this will be interesting.
Well, let me play another clip. And again, we'll keep going back to the same debate. This is Rich Negrin. Was managing director, and he also wants to be the next district attorney of Philadelphia.
We're going to create a citizen engagement unit that's not just about getting together with people and going to town hall meetings, that actively rolls up our sleeves and works together to be a part of the solution, not just prosecute crime after it happens, but to help prevent crime before it occurs.
Holly, can we call him, of all of these candidates, a more quote-unquote establishment candidate?
I think so, yes.
Obviously.
He was the managing director under former Mayor Michael Nutter. He also has received the endorsement of the Fraternal Order of Police, which back in the old days when district attorney races were, you know, much different and much more focused on law and order, that was the coveted endorsement, right? And it still is a huge deal. The union brings out votes. It's very organized, and it oftentimes is very decisive in elections like this, especially low turnout elections.
We should also note he did get the endorsement of the Guardian Civic League, which is the African-American and the
Spanish law enforcement.
Soleil, right?
All of the law enforcement unions.
Yes. Have lined up behind Rich Negrin.
Yes, exactly. I think he is somewhat of an establishment candidate. He also got the endorsement of the Philadelphia Inquirer, which is an establishment publication, I suppose you could say. It's not an indie, right?
Right, it's not an indie.
It's interesting because the local Democratic Party decided this year to not endorse a candidate as a whole. They're leaving it up to each individual ward leader. So that means that Rich was not able to win over, you know, enough of the ward leaders in order to secure the Democratic City Committee's endorsement. Which would have been the ultimate sign of the establishment. I think part of that is because of his ties to Mayor Michael Nutter, who, even though he is a ward leader, was never very popular among ward leaders. I think that's hurting him a little bit. I think Tariq also had some support among some of the ward leaders as well. And even Joe Kahn, I heard, had a little bit too. So,
not the candidate.
You know, that I think the fact that the Democratic City Committee was not able to agree on an endorsement really tells you how wide open this race is.
Dave, you want to add to that?
Rich Negron arguably has the most varied experience of them all. He was a prosecutor early on. He was a defense attorney. He was a corporate attorney for Aramark and then worked in city government. And, you know, I made this point early. I really do believe that this is a management job. I mean, you're not going to be in the courtroom. I mean, your policies and your principles matter a lot, but can you manage a budget? Can you, you know, can you set direction? Can you keep things on track? And he, at least on paper, has the most management experience of that kind. He ran the Board of Revision of Taxes and then was city managing director under Nutter for a long time. So that's one thing he has going for him. On the politics end of it, he hasn't raised a ton of money. Hmm. And you kind of, you know, it matters. Nowadays, when you want to get attention and buy media, if your bank account is light, it's a problem.
I also read he served on the Board of Ethics. Is that true, Dave?
He was an early member of the Board of Ethics, and it is to his credit that Richard Glaser, who served many years as chairman of the Board of Ethics and is credited with doing a lot to give it the teeth that it has, is his campaign chairman.
Oh, interesting.
So he ranks well on the integrity
and
scale.
And I think that would have actually really helped him if Seth Williams had stayed in the race, right? I mean, when he actually started, he was kind of pitching himself as the ethics candidate. He was a founding member of the ethics board. He also released some proposals in order to try to clean up the office. He was saying he wasn't going to accept certain donations from criminal defense attorneys in order to avoid a conflict. So you can see how if Seth had stayed in and not dropped out of the race, how it might have been completely different.
And he's also a board member of Cease Fire. I think I read that as well, just to sort of add, we're doing little quick bio sketches of all the candidates running for district attorney of Philadelphia and focusing largely on the Democrats in that there are seven of them all wanting your vote on the May 16th primary. And again, we want to hear from you. We want to know whether you have decided on a candidate, whether you're undecided, what issues matter to you. Obviously, if you live in Philadelphia, you can call or text our comment line, 267-405-2006. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me play one more clip, and this, again, coming from the same debate that we have been highlighting this hour, and this is Joe Kahn, who also wants to be District Attorney of Philadelphia.
I am the progressive prosecutor, the person in this race who has spent his entire life in Philadelphia, a person who came from a family formed by a Catholic girl from West Oak Lane who lost her father to addiction when she was 10, and a Muslim immigrant.
And a Muslim immigrant. So it's an interesting bio. Now, he was also endorsed by Ed Rendell.
Right. You know, Joe Kahn got in this. He was the first candidate in this race, August or September, when Seth Williams was still in there, coming out of nowhere. He wanted it. He worked hard at it. He's raised a lot of money. He's gotten some support from about four or five wards in the city. And, you know, he's kind of a comer. As you heard, I mean, he thinks he embodies modern Philadelphia, you know, this fusion of immigrant and native backgrounds. I think he's one of those people who had a shot. His is the first ad that actually attacked another candidate.
Oh, interesting.
Michael Untermyer, who we'll talk about, who is a millionaire self-funder, pointing out that Untermyer has a Republican past. So Kahn, he's competing for a lot of the same progressive votes, I think, that Larry Krasner and others are.
And he's a federal prosecutor. He was in the district attorney's office, Holly. I mean, anything we need to know that sets him apart from all these other progressives who are running?
He's also younger. He's one of the younger candidates in the race, him and Jack O'Neill.
Yep.
Yeah, which is certainly young in Philadelphia politics. And I think that that's going to appeal somewhat to some young voters. Obviously, young people are the people that turn out the least in elections like this. So it's unclear how much that'll be the case. But I moderated an event with all of the district attorney candidates for the Pennsylvania College Democrats, and they overwhelmingly voted to support him afterward in a straw poll. So I think that youth was part of that.
He's well spoken. He has something to say, and he speaks with a lot of conviction. Yeah.
What was it like to moderate that debate, Holly?
Well, so it actually wasn't a debate. I said event for a reason. We tried to switch it up and instead kind of had 15-minute, we called it speed dating rounds, with each of the candidates. So that was entertaining.
You speed dated each of them?
I guess that was the idea.
Yikes.
I did moderate, actually, a real debate with all of them, and it got rather feisty.
Really?
Some of the candidates were going at each other. It was pretty interesting. And, you know, they agree on so many of the policies, so what they end up usually attacking each other on is their experience and their background. And, you know, Tariq went after Larry a little bit, saying that he did have the experience of, kind of like we were saying, suffering the injustice of the justice system that he didn't have, and other people went after each other. It was fun.
It was fun.
The thing I love about Tariq's story about getting hit in the head by a police flashlight, I asked him about that when I interviewed him. This was from when he was a kid in a housing project, and you've heard this story, Holly? It's a police officer he admires, who he says, you know, caught him being someplace he wasn't supposed to, and he gave me a little bop and took me home to my mom. And he kind of cites it as an example of enlightened and compassionate policing at the time. But now it works to his advantage to have had that whack with a flashlight.
Let me play another clip here. And we were talking about Michael Untermyer. He was in the district attorney's office. He was a state prosecutor. He was a Republican, now a Democrat. And again, let's go back to this debate. We'll have a tiny little clip of Michael Untermyer.
In Philadelphia, we don't go after white-collar crime. Other cities of our size go after white-collar crime aggressively and locally. And those investigations will pay for themselves.
What do we need to know about this guy, Michael Untermyer? Dave?
He's a candidate for office. This is his fourth run for office, three different offices, two different parties in the last 10 years. He ran for sheriff as a Democrat, and then district attorney as a Republican, then city council as a Republican, and now he's running as a Democrat for district attorney.
And you can do that?
Yeah.
Apparently.
Free country.
You can switch parties. People do that. And as you can hear there, he's done his homework. I mean, he's looked around the country. He's had people develop position papers. He came out with another one yesterday. I would say he is not long on the charisma department. He tends to speak in the rather straightforward way that you just heard. But his real advantage is that for the last couple of decades, I guess, he's been a real estate developer. He's made money, and he is spending it. He has put, I think, at least $550,000 into this race.
Wow.
We'll have another report Friday. I suspect it will turn out to be more. He's putting more money on television than anybody else, and that matters. I mean, they're pretty well-produced ad done by the campaign group of Neil Oxman and company. So you'd have to take him seriously.
Yeah, and I mean, he also got on TV first before anybody else did. And as we've seen in the gubernatorial race with Tom Wolf, that matters. The campaign group, as Dave noted, is run by Neil Oxman. They are the people that produce the ads that were credited with helping to get Mayor Michael Nutter elected. You know,
featuring
the cute
daughter.
One with his daughter. Yes. So, I mean, I think that all is going for him.
And he also, again, you can correct me if I'm wrong, supervised the asset forfeiture unit?
No, that's Beth Grossman.
Oh, I am wrong.
Yeah.
Okay.
He criticizes the asset forfeiture unit. People have noted that the progressive tack he is taking on issues like bail now stands somewhat in contrast to positions that he took when he was running as a Republican in 2011. He kind of talked about the need for people to get locked up when they commit these crimes in neighborhoods. Much more tough on crime at the time.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Just to sort of make sure our listeners know what some of the issues are, I just want to recap here. So we're talking about incarceration and drugs, civil forfeiture, sanctuary cities, stop and frisk. You wrote, Holly, that Pennsylvania locks up more people per capita, or Philadelphia, than any other big city. Philadelphia locks up more people per capita than any other big city.
Yeah, that is according to statistics from a few years ago. Since then, there's been a concerted effort by Mayor Jim Kenney's administration to lower the prison population, and they have been somewhat successful in doing that. They're trying to reduce it, I believe, by a third in the next three years, and they're on their way to doing that. But yeah, I mean, Philadelphia, I think partly because of mandatory minimums, partly because of Lynn Abraham, partly because of other tough-on-crime proposals that Philadelphia has enacted, has ended up having this kind of horrible thing.
Yeah.
And part of that is the cash bail system that makes it, for poor defendants, they can sit in in jail waiting for a trial. They've lost their job. It's blown their lives up. And then they may even, the charges may be dropped. So everybody agrees that that's something that needs to be addressed. The other thing, there's this word called diversion. You know, when we're talking about arresting low-level drug offenders or other small nonviolent crimes, trying to get people into programs of community service and turning their lives around rather than locking them up and saddling them with a felony conviction that will stigmatize them for the rest of their lives. Everybody talks about a program in Seattle, the LEADS, Law Enforcement Assisted Diversion Program. When you look at that, you realize this is hard. I mean, that program in Seattle, one study with a limited sample showed that it reduced recidivism by 58%, but it's still not even a citywide program because the resources are expensive, caseworkers for everybody and, you know, job assistance and training and all that. I think everybody agrees that, and it would probably be cheaper in the long run to find alternatives to incarceration. But I think that's the really important and tough nut to crack. I mean, if you can
to figure out what works.
Yeah, people.
And NIMBYism sometimes plays a role too. I mean,
not in my backyard.
Yeah, the previous Nutter administration tried to create day reporting senators, which would be an alternative to incarceration, and they found just enormous pushback from neighborhoods when they tried to do it and actually weren't able to start a single one.
With the idea that excellent ideas, but how do you implement it and where do you put it and what will the results be? I mean, Dave, we're almost up in a break here. You mentioned the fact that, and this is true across the country, the crime rate is down, but there certainly are pockets in the city where violent crime is a serious problem. There are weekends where you hear about, you know, multiple shootings happening in this part of the city or certain parts of the city.
And nonviolent crimes can be a problem too. I mean, if you're a bodega owner in Fairhill, and somebody's been robbing from you day in, day out, and you finally get him arrested, I mean, you don't want to see him back out on the street the next day with some kind of a joke slap on the wrist. So I think everybody agrees we incarcerate too many people and stigmatize too many people, but actually designing the programs that will make it work are going to be a challenge, and that's why this is an important choice.
Well, we are talking about the DA's race here in Philadelphia. The primary is May 16th. I should add that the budget for the district attorney's office is something like $52 million and a staff of almost 600, so it's a big job with a lot of responsibilities. Talking with our own Dave Davies and also Philadelphia Magazine's Holly Otterbein. And again, we want to hear from you. Text or call our comment line, 267-405-2006. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times to join our conversation. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoing, talking with Holly Otterbein from Philadelphia Magazine and Dave Davies from WHYY. Again, talking about the race for district attorney here in Philadelphia. The primary is May 16th. It is an open race. The current district attorney has been indicted, and there are seven Democrats running and one Republican. We've heard a clip from Lawrence Krasner. We've talked about all of these candidates so far. Tariq El-Shabazz, Rich Negrin, Joe Kahn, and Michael Untermyer. Let me play another clip, and this is from Jack O'Neill. Let's give it a listen.
What the DA's office needs to do is revisit the probation system itself and voluntarily say that we want most of these people, we can do at least half, off of probation. If they haven't had any problems, if they've done well, there's no reason to keep them on probation. Keeping them on probation makes it harder for them to get jobs.
So, Dave, what should we know about John O'Neill? He announced in March.
He's the youngest in the field, 35. Well-spoken, as you can hear. I mean, he likes to say he's the most experienced candidate in the field, despite his youth, because he's actually spent more time in the Philadelphia DA's office than anybody else. His entire legal career was as a prosecutor there. You know, Holly and I have talked about this. There's something of a mystery about Mr. O'Neill. I mean, he dropped into the race out of nowhere on the last day of filing nominating petitions. I called the party chairman, Bob Brady. Who is this? No idea.
He said no idea?
He had never heard of him. I'd never heard of him. But I got him in, and you know, he's a smart, you know, well-spoken young man. But he has gotten traction by being the darling of the building trades. Mm. And it's a little puzzling.
There's no known connection previously between Mr. O'Neill and the building trades. But last week, he received the endorsement of 8 building trades. Then this week, we learned that Building a Better Pennsylvania, which is a super PAC that in past years had been funded partly by John Daugherty's Local 98 union is now putting ads up for Jack O'Neill for the next week, spending about $120,000 over the next week on these advertisements. So here's this guy who kind of came out of nowhere, and then he ended up, you know, winning the support of, you know, some of the most powerful people in Philadelphia. I mean, John Dougherty is arguably the most powerful kingmaker in Philadelphia and one of the biggest kingmakers in all of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, so, you know, what a big question mark here, right? Dave?
Shortly after O'Neill entered the race, somebody told me that Dougherty had helped him circulate his nominating petition. So when I brought him in for an interview, I asked that question, and the answer was sort of, well, kind of having a sort of a little, not exactly, it was mostly me, but, you know, I mean, it was sort of like, what? I mean, it just didn't really deny it, didn't really answer the question. And then when these building trades, the eight unions that Holly mentioned, came out, I spoke to several of them. I asked them, was Dougherty playing a role here? No, this is just us. This is just us. But off the record, others would say, yeah, Doc has given the nod here. And then, as Holly mentioned, this super PAC, Build a Better PA, which arguably is responsible for getting Jim Kenney elected. They spent $1.6 million in Kenney's race, have now taken some of that leftover money. And my attempts to reach a spokesman for Local 98, the Electricians Union, were unsuccessful.
They can call here.
It's hard not to conclude that Dougherty is playing a role here, and there's a reason it would be a quiet role. Think about the current DA under federal indictment. Think about John Dougherty last August, the FBI raiding his home, office, and other associated sites. It's not maybe the happiest thing to be endorsed by somebody in that circumstance, and yet it seems as if he's exerting some influence on behalf of Jack O'Neill.
Yeah, and on top of everything that you just said, the current district attorney, Seth Williams, actually kicked up a case involving Dougherty to the attorney general's office about a year ago, an alleged assault.
A violence on a picket line case.
The idea that the district attorney couldn't or shouldn't look at this case, we're going to kick it upstairs and get the feds involved.
Seth said that, because of his personal relationship, more or less, with Dougherty, that he couldn't do it.
One more thing to note about Jack O'Neill and this relationship. When he spoke at this rally last week where these eight building trades unions endorsed him, he stood up and he said, once I am elected, within 30 days, I will appoint a special deputy labor liaison so that when you call, you can have regular communication with someone who understands what you need. Now, I asked him afterward, that kind of sounds like you giving campaign supporters special access. And what he said is, no. I do think the DA's office needs to go after rogue, read non-union employers who skip around, who don't pull the right permits, who exploit people, who violate prevailing wage provisions and rip off workers. DA's office, he said, has not done this in the past, and he thinks it ought to.
Wow. That's getting involved in a complicated...
Right. I mean, arguably, it's a targeted enforcement of an existing law and maybe a really good thing, but it's hard to see it as disconnected from his political support.
You mentioned Mayor Kenney. Has he, Holly, endorsed anybody or given a wink to anybody who's running so far?
He has not weighed in yet, and I actually just sent a question to his spokeswoman asking if he planned on doing so. Dave, do you have any insights on that?
No clue.
Not a clue.
No clue.
And perfectly appropriate. Nothing wrong with that. Let me play one more clip, and this is the seventh Democrat we'll be talking about, Teresa Carr Denai, former municipal court judge, and let's hear a little bit of what she said.
I live in the Northeast, and my mother lived with me for 14 years, but I still wouldn't let her go take a walk by herself. I don't care what neighborhood you're in. There are some predators out there, and they're the ones we have to focus on. We have to get these people off the streets.
She sounds a little different from the other candidates, Holly, is she?
She's a little bit more down the middle, I think, a little bit more of a moderate. Teresa Carr Denai was a former judge for many, many years. She is on board with the plan to reduce the prison population, so she sees herself as a progressive in that way. But at the same time, she does, I think, in some ways adopt a more tough-on-crime stance than the other candidates and talks about things like, for instance, she wants to increase the fine for smoking marijuana outside. It's something that she's noticed happening in Philadelphia, and it bothers her. She doesn't like seeing it, smelling it. So this is something that she has brought up, and that, of course, kind of harkens back to a past era.
It's interesting. You know, she talks about having been active in the women's movement in the 1970s, but her public career was done the old-fashioned way. You know, she was a lawyer and did free work for the Democratic City Committee, the kinds of things that get you credit with the party, you know, filing petitions to remove people from the ballot or file nominating petitions, eventually ran for municipal court judge with the support of the party, and for, what, 20 years or so has had a generally okay reign. There was one very controversial case involving
a rape case involving a prostitute,
but she got recommended ratings from the bar. I'm not quite sure what she thinks her path to victory here. She's 69. She would have faced mandatory retirement had she not left the bench. She has some relationships with ward leaders, although one I spoke to said, no, I'm not actually supporting her, even though she thinks I may be. Mm-hmm. The other curious thing is that 80% of her campaign money comes from her own pocket. She has put $130,000 of her own money into a campaign, and it's a little curious.
Oh, interesting.
I don't mean to suggest that there's anything untoward about it.
But why?
It's a risk to take.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like her path to victory would have been the machine route, right? I mean, like you mentioned, she had been counsel for the local Democratic Party in past years. She does have relationships with some of these ward leaders that go back decades. If she perhaps had done a better job, I think, winning them over months ago, she maybe could have won the Democratic Party's endorsement or at least a large number of ward leaders individually, and that just hasn't happened.
We are talking about the candidates for district attorney here in Philadelphia, and the primary is, 2 weeks from today? It's May 16th. And again, talking with Holly Otterbein and Dave Davies. And again, we want to hear from you. Text or call our comment line, 267-405-2006. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, as Gio did. Gio wanting to know, have the candidates addressed Philadelphia's unique system of keeping 30% of bail posted by defendants? This is a little bit in the weeds here. I'm looking at both of you who have quizzical looks on your faces.
I don't know what that refers to.
Don't know. Okay.
I don't think the candidates have addressed that.
Okay. Okay. Email from Phyllis. This is great coverage of the DA race before the primary on May 16th. Thank you very much. Well, we appreciate that. Let me ask you about the Republican running for district attorney. This is a woman named Beth Grossman. I believe she was a Democrat, then a Republican, then a Democrat, and now she's a Republican. Holly, what should we know about Beth Grossman?
Beth Grossman was a former prosecutor in the district attorney's office for many years. Like I mentioned, she is a Republican, but she paints herself as someone who does take somewhat progressive stances on some issues. She has concerns about drug addiction, wants to come up with some solutions to that that maybe are outside of the traditional path. Another thing that she is probably best known for is that she actually did lead the civil asset forfeiture unit in the district attorney's office. And this took place when that faced a lot of criticism from people as being overly harsh, as taking small amounts of money from people, you know, $5, $10, also trying to take people's homes in some cases when, you know, for instance, the story that kind of came up a lot was the idea of a parent who didn't know that their child was dealing drugs, and then they got caught, and the district attorney's office tried to seize their home.
Yes.
Yes.
And the critical point in all of these cases being these are seizures from people who are not even accused of a crime.
Exactly.
Let alone convicted.
Right.
And she ran that unit, you're saying, Holly?
She did. And I've asked her about it, and she strongly defends it. I mean, in the case of, I forget what the name of the family was, but there was one family in particular in the Northeast that the district attorney tried to seize their home after the son was found with drugs. She said, you know, it really concerned her that drugs seem to be entering the Northeast in a real way, opioids, the problem that we've been hearing about a lot across the country. And she saw this as a legitimate way to crack down on it.
You know, what I've heard from other prosecutors is that what you're not hearing in these cases is that it's often the neighbors who want you to shut the house down because they've been dealing with problems from this family, from this house for a long, long time, and just shut it down. But it certainly seems like there's some due process issues. You know, I talked to the DA's office several weeks ago and asked, how much do you actually get from the asset forfeiture program? And it wasn't easy to find, and unfortunately I don't remember the numbers, but it's gone down a lot. I think that they used to be a lot used to be applied a lot more broadly. It's maybe around a couple million bucks a year now. But most of the candidates think it ought to have a serious review.
It seems to me the whoever the district attorney is, an important relationship to look at, Holly, is their relationship with a police commissioner. I mean, how much is there any way to sort of know how these progressive ideas might line up with how the current police commissioner thinks about crime and enforcement?
Well, Richard Ross, the current police commissioner, is working for Mayor Kenney, who ran as a progressive. He actually ran with the goal of stopping end and frisk, stop and frisk. Of course, since he got into office, that kind of changed. The rhetoric came down a little bit, and he said, I want to just reform it. But I mean, I think that the fact that he is working with Mayor Kenney, who is a progressive in many ways, shows that I'm sure with many of these candidates, he will be just fine. Rich Negrin, of course, received the support of the Fraternal Order of the Police. Now, the union is very different than the leadership in the police department. So it's hard to say kind of what that means. But, you know, I think the only candidate that I've heard anyone talk about there could potentially be a problem with the current employees is Larry Krasner. Some prosecutors in the district attorney's office raise concerns about him, say that he's, you know, too far left, too much of an outsider, would, you know, just not get along with a lot of the people in there.
Yeah, as a civil rights attorney, can I just toss a question to you? This is from Mark. Dave, my question is, which candidate do you think is best able to work the system to get the kind of changes that you all are talking about? I know you don't endorse people on the air, but I mean, is it a matter of someone who's got a good managerial skills? Is it someone who's good in the courtroom? A good politician?
I mean, I think there are a lot of dimensions to good leadership, and generally the best way to judge that is what they've done in the past. And I'm afraid to disappoint Mark, but I don't feel like I know enough about what these candidates have done, you know, in detail to have a specific opinion about it. I do think in the case of Larry Krasner, it's very interesting because, as Holly says, there are players in the justice system who would just be appalled that this turn 'em loose guy is now going to have the lock 'em up job. One of the things I asked him when I interviewed was that, you know, when people talk about you, they see a guy who's very principled and committed, but maybe a little abrasive, not the most likable person. He thought about it a second and said, I think it's right. I think you're right. But he said that's because he has to be a fighter. And he said he has perfectly good relationships with people in the criminal justice system who pursue fairness, and he mentioned in specific Richard Ross and Chief Ramsey. So what he says is, yeah, I can be tough. I'm going to be tough, but I know how to get things done and how to work with people when they're willing to work with me.
About 45 seconds, Holly. 2 weeks for the primary election. Anything, any more debates, any big events that you know of in the next 2 weeks?
I don't know of any. Dave might know of some. I'm sure that there are some. I mean, I think that they've had as many forums as the mayoral candidates did in 2015. I mean, every single night they're out there, so I'm sure there are some. We're going to see a lot of ads over the next 2 weeks. I mean, as we noted, the Jack O'Neill Super PAC ads are beginning today. We have Joe Kahn on TV. Larry Krasner, the Super PAC, is on TV. I don't think Rich Negrin is on TV or will be. Teresa Cardenas, I don't think she's going to be.
Negrin will be, but it's not yet.
Okay. Yeah. And Michael Untermyer, of course, has been on TV for many weeks now. Yeah. So I think we're just going to see a lot of that over the next 2 weeks.
The big seismic event would be if somebody dropped out, and I think that's not happening.
No. Interesting. Well, I learned a lot. I appreciate both of
Spent
you.
Spent too much money.
Appreciate both of you joining us today on Radio Times. Holly Otterbein, senior writer at Philadelphia Magazine. Holly, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. And Dave Davies, senior reporter here at WHYY. He writes the Off Mic blog. And Dave, always learn a thing or two when you're on Radio Times. Thanks so much.
Sure. Go back to my desk.
Or he'll send you back to your desk. And you can go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out much more about this program. And we did take some photos and a little behind-the-scenes video that you can check out as well. Charlie Kyer, our engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us.